Welcome to Tourism Media Mayhem, the podcast attempting to optimize the CRO of the LP for optimal CPL of destination marketing.
I was hoping you'd say of DM, but that could be many things.
No, we're going to stay out of the DMs for this one.
Okay. Nice. I assume we're talking about some acronyms today.
Yeah. Well, I kind of figured, you know, we could get into all the weird jargon us stupid digital marketers use and demystify it a little bit. Because it's really not as special as we like to make it sound.
Especially the stupid digital marketer part that you just mentioned.
The worst.
Sasha, I'm hearing.
I ask you this like every other episode. Do you have any good stories to tell today?
Oh, goodness. The word stories just throws me off. Like, you say stories, my mind goes blank.
Or a nice little factoid or something.
Factoid. You know what? I do have a factoid that's actually related to destination marketing.
Oh, snap. Relevant.
Yes. I want to say it was a Harris poll that I saw the other day, some statistics, but I was reading about summer travel. Guess what percentage are driving for summer travel?
300%. No, that's not real.
No, come on. 0 to 100.
67%.
79%.
Whoa.
Higher than I thought. Like, I knew travel's returning, but just, I don't know, drive market's still super important for summer travel.
Don't forget it.
Yep, so I know we've talked about that a lot here and there, but just FYI.
Okay.
Yeah, what about you? Do you have a story for us today, Josh? Or a factoid?
No. I finally got a PlayStation 5, so I'm excited.
Oh, okay, you did. Wait, did you have an Xbox prior? Or
no, I had a PlayStation 4, but you know, it just took 20 months or so to finally get my hands on a PS5. So.
Got it.
That's just one of the more exciting things happening in my personal life. So I felt like I needed to share it with all of our listeners.
Excellent. So, what are you playing then?
I think
days?
I can hear some applause in the background. This is so cool. From the future, because you haven't listened to this yet. Okay.
Well, what are you playing though? What are you playing on it?
Gran Turismo 7 is what I'm spending most of my time on.
So, I don't know why I asked, because I have literally no idea. I'm like, oh, cool.
It's a racing game.
Okay.
To drive cars.
I get that.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's a good time.
That's cool.
Okay. Well, that's enough about me and my video game habits.
Yeah, I probably don't want to dig any deeper on that.
No. Probably for the best. So,
well, what are we talking about today, Josh?
So the reason I brought this topic today is I actually got an email from one of our account managers earlier today, and he sent me this link to this company. He's like, one of our clients is asking about this, and I won't name the company, but it looked super shady. But they were throwing around a lot of these big words like programmatic and geofencing and you'll get 2,000 views for $150 kind of thing. And it made me realize that sometimes the language us digital marketers use can sound really cool and be somewhat complicated, and it's easy to kind of take advantage of people or be talking about things that other people don't fully understand. And then people don't like to ask questions because they don't want to sound stupid. And that's just dumb. You should always ask questions. Don't worry about sounding stupid. And us self-important, self-righteous marketers.
Wow, landed on thick. You're doing my job for me, Josh.
I know. We're the worst. I hate jargon. I really do. Like every industry has it. And it serves its purpose because there's some efficiency there when everybody within the little group knows what's going on. But then I think it can be really harmful outside of, you know, our little circles.
Yeah. No, I can see that. I guess just in the context, right? It kind of depends on the person and how they're framing it.
Yep. So that's my soapbox and why I felt like this was going to be a good topic for today.
Nice. I like it. So let's break it down.
Well, yeah, let's break it down. So the first one I wanted to touch on is the word programmatic.
I'm waiting for you to explain it.
I was going to see what you had to say about programmatic.
I just know that I hear it thrown around. Here's my problem with the jargon. I guess I'll get on a soapbox too. I'll join you up there. I just hear so many of these terms used in a lot of different conversations and just different contexts. And so it is hard to nail down sometimes what someone's referring to, because it can, I don't know, with programmatic, that's one that I know we've talked about a lot, but I've heard it in so many different types of conversations that I still am like, yeah, you could explain it for me. I need it for a refresher.
Okay. Well, so it's a dumb word. Like so many of these words we're going to discuss today, some of them have a real purpose. The word programmatic is stupid because basically any digital ad buying is done through some sort of auction system where you are setting a bid for what you're willing to pay for either a certain number of impressions for a certain targeted audience or what you're willing to pay for an impression or a click on a certain keyword. So it's all auction oriented because there's even in the World Wide Web, there's a finite amount of space in which an ad can be served at any given time. So you have to set these parameters and then kind of let the machines do their thing. And that's buying programmatically because you are not buying it. Yeah, you're not bidding on something or you're not buying something directly. It's not like you going to the New York Times because you place so many buys with the New York Times, going directly to the New York Times and saying, I want a full page ad on the back page. Like this would be putting out a bunch of parameters and what we're willing to pay and then letting the systems do their thing.
So really almost any self-serve platform that the campaign is set up through.
Yeah. So what you're buying in Facebook is a programmatic buy. What you're doing on Google Ads, paid search, that's programmatically purchased advertising. But what happens is people don't talk about those platforms with the word programmatic.
When
you hear the word programmatic, typically what someone's talking about is buying display ads through other ad networks and trade platforms besides the big main players like Google, like Facebook.
So why display specifically, Josh?
Because it's the easiest set of inventory that these companies can get a hold of. That and OTT is currently another really big programmatically buyable thing. You won't let me do any of it, but whatever.
Okay, cool. So yeah, so that's where I always get fudged up with programmatic, because I feel like it is a general term, but it, like you said, it's not always used in the general sense. And then I get confused.
Yeah. So when you hear programmatic, think buying display ads or video ad placements in places outside of the major networks like Google or Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
So
nice.
That's what you can consider the word programmatic to mean.
So what's your preference? Do you use that word a lot? And if so, like when, and if not, what else do you use?
I kind of feel like I have to use that word because that's kind of what's expected to use when you're talking about buying those ads outside of Google and Facebook. So I do use the word programmatic from time to time, and especially when I'm talking about some of the ad buying platforms that we use. I'm trying my hardest not to use jargon. Through other ad buying platforms that allow us access to these other networks.
Interesting. So it specifically excludes Facebook and Google?
Yes. Okay, so let's take another step forward into weird terminology. So there's, and I can't remember if we've talked about this in other episodes, so forgive me if this is redundant, but there is also a thing called a demand side platform or a DSP. And that is typically the program or the auction desk where you can purchase the ad, the programmatic buys. So these platforms, these DSPs, have access to these networks, and they're the ones you're using to buy the quote-unquote programmatic ads.
So what's the top benefit then of purchasing ads this way?
Expanded reach. You're hitting different people in different places. So especially as Google and Facebook come under more scrutiny and their targeting diminishes, there's going to be other inventory available. Definitely worth taking advantage of that. A lot of major television networks and publishing networks do make ad space available for programmatic buys. Mm-hmm. So if you're wanting to get your ad on a flashy logos site or app, usually you can find a way to do it through a programmatic provider or a DSP. Same thing.
So tell me some of the top DSPs then.
So a couple of them, a couple of the big ones, one of the biggest ones is like the Trade Desk. That one gets used a lot. There's some that are more specific to individual industries. Like I know there are a couple in B2B circles that are relatively big. We utilize at Relic a couple. One is called Simplify and the other is called Choosel. We use them for different reasons because they have different ad networks that they have access to, and they also have different targeting capabilities. So there's a bajillion options. I get hit up by at least one new DSP a week trying to get me to use them instead of someone else.
That's interesting. I actually do too, but I don't refer to them as DSPs. But for OTT.
So cool. In tourism circles, programmatic's usually most used for awareness tactics and very specific geofencing type campaigns, which brings us to the next word I wanted to talk about, geofencing.
Geofencing.
That one's a little more straightforward, but it sounds fancy.
Yes, and I think it's important to talk about because this is actually a really cool one.
So we've talked about targeting before. We have a whole episode about it. I don't remember the number, but just scroll backwards and look for it and listen to it. But like geofencing is targeting your ads in a certain geographic area. That's really all that means. But it gets thrown around like it's really special. Mm-hmm. And it's not. It's just not. Every ad platform has some sort of geofencing capability, whether it's just setting a radius around a certain pinpoint that you drop, or it's targeting zip codes or counties or regions or states or whatever. Like, everybody does it. So don't get excited with the word geofence, is my point.
Yeah, like it is something that you can almost come to expect with a lot of online marketing. Like almost anything, you should be able to geofence, right?
Yes. So I think my main point in talking about geofencing today is just, especially with this more predatory example I saw, it was being thrown around as like this really cool thing. And it's just.
I mean, yeah. I do think it's cool.
It is cool. And it's an important thing to use.
Well, it's cool in certain new ways you can use it. I'll give you an example.
Okay.
It's cool if I place an outdoor billboard by and I supply you with my billboard locations and you geofence around them to capture devices and serve them display ads.
Yes.
That's a cool way to geofence.
That is cool. Yeah. Because you're then targeting people who saw a physical ad.
Right. So I think the pairing of geofencing certain traditional media tactics and locations, I think that that's what excites me about geofencing.
Yeah, that's a fair point. There are cool ways to use it, and there are even some reverse ways to use geofencing depending on the platform, like targeting devices that were in a location in the past and then serving ads to them wherever they may be today.
Repeat visitation. Love it.
Right. So my point is just don't get excited by the word geofencing. Dive into what they mean. And if they're like, yeah, we can drop a pin and target ads in like a 2-mile radius of this physical location. I'm like, yippee, everybody can do that.
Josh. Yippee. What you're saying is don't get swayed by a sales pitch that is crafting their top message around geofencing, because the odds are that their five other competitors can do the exact same thing and they need to bring something else to the table. That's what I'm hearing.
Yes. If they present a really unique way to do it, yes. But if it's just like a radius or a zip code, like, yeah.
Yeah. It's like, okay, a little bit of old news because everyone can do that now.
Yes.
Got it.
And if you're listening to this podcast, it's a podcast, so you probably know the geofencing is old news because you're more technologically advanced than someone just listening to the AM radio.
I feel like this is a jab at me for some reason. I don't know why.
No, I would have said FM if it was a jab.
Oh, you left that out on purpose. Okay.
There was actually like a thought process.
Okay,
there.
I just was like, okay. Well, what's next, Josh? What else are you going to teach us today?
Oh, man.
How about the difference between, I think we might have talked about this too, but the difference between SEM and PPC, because those terms, they're the same thing, right? And it's just a preference on how, like, which term you want to use from what I understand?
Yes, mostly.
Okay, tell us about them.
We're going to need to just retitle this episode, Josh Rants Against Digital Jargon.
Okay. Even though Josh is a digital marketer.
Yes, just because I dislike the terminology doesn't mean I dislike doing it, okay?
Okay. You so passionate about it?
I clearly don't care at all. So, SEM and PPC, search engine marketing versus pay-per-click. Pay-per-click describes the auction type of buying paid search ads. Unlike so many other platforms where you pay for impressions, mm-hmm. in paid search, you're typically only paying if someone clicks on an ad. So yeah, you can be served 10 times, and if no one clicked, you don't get charged anything. So PPC was originally used to talk about paid search way back in the day, when that was a really unique concept. The term has evolved a little bit, or the use of SEM has been added to focus on search engine marketing in general. And so it's usually still talking about keyword-based targeting and marketing, but it's a little more nebulous. Some organizations will use the term SEM to mean anything relating to a search engine. So it could be organic efforts on your own website to make sure that Google can crawl the website and look for it and show it to searchers, and mean PPC. Others just use it to mean PPC. So it's just, its usage is confusing. So PPC, even though it's an old term, still is very specific to paid search. Mm-hmm. And so I tend to stick to PPC or SEO when I'm talking about a specific tactic, and I just try to forget SEM exists.
Yeah, that makes sense. PPC is more descriptive.
Thank you. That's a much more concise way to put it than me talking about it for 2 minutes.
That's what I'm here for. I'm helping you.
Yeah.
Nice.
Rant, continue. CRO. That's another acronym that gets thrown around a lot, and I'm trying to talk about it more with clients, and I'm understanding that not as many people know that one.
Yeah, what is that one?
So that one stands for conversion rate optimization.
Nice.
So are you familiar with that one, Sasha?
Yeah, but I couldn't like regurgitate it back to you.
Fine, then I'll do it.
I mean, I just feel like I'm talking this whole episode. Optimizing conversion rates, but...
Yeah, optimizing conversion rates.
Yeah, it's kind of in the name. I just couldn't remember what it stood for.
It is in the name. Yeah, so conversion rate optimization is typically used to talk about making changes to your website, whether that's through functionality or through design, in order to improve the number of conversions that you're getting. So, nice. Like, maybe that's changing how many fields are required on a form to get someone to submit a form. Or maybe it's changing button colors or making some content higher up on the page or lower on the page or whatever. It's a matter of testing and improving the conversion performance of your website.
Cool.
It's a super important topic that does not get talked a lot about. We should probably do a whole episode on it at some point. Why didn't I think of that instead of me just ranting for 25 minutes? I don't know. But
next time.
What I see as being like the most important thing here is you can have great ads. You can have great targeting on your ads. And this goes for traditional tactics too. You could have the best billboard creative with a simple URL to send people to. And then if someone gets there and they don't see what they're looking for, or it's confusing, or there's something off about it, you're going to lose conversions from it.
Yeah. There's nothing worse than clicking on an Instagram advertisement for a certain product and having it take you not to the page where you can purchase that product. It takes me to like the homepage. I've talked about this before too. And I will never search for it. If it does not take me when it says like, check it out or buy now or look at price. If it takes me to your homepage and I have to search, I'm gone. Like it's done. I don't care that much about it. See you later. So I think that's very important.
It's so important. So important. You only have a very short window to convince someone to do something. And yeah, if you lose it, you lose it. So for you destination marketers, this is especially important. If your ad's talking about a visitor guide download, don't send them to your homepage. Send them to the page where they can request the visitor guide. Yes. If it's a newsletter sign up, make sure that field is on the page that they click through to. If you're talking about the great hiking you have to offer in like a paid search ad, send them to the hiking page, not the homepage.
Yes. I love it.
Yes.
Good stuff.
Cool.
Josh, what about lead gen? Another term I hear thrown around a good bit.
Lead gen, Sasha, is what we were just talking about. It's a type of conversion-oriented action. So lead gen in B2B circles is usually getting someone to sign up for a demo or an email nurture or something to make them want to convert. In tourism, it can be the same thing. It can be using a carrot
dangling a carrot? Using a carrot?
Like a visitor guide.
Oh, okay.
Like a visitor guide and asking them for their email address in exchange for the visitor guide. That is a lead gen tactic. And gen, by the way, is G-E-N, not J-E-N. And that is short for generation. You're generating.
Who says J-E-N?
I'm just trying to be clear.
Okay, okay.
We're demystifying here, so I'm spelling.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Cool. So you collect somebody's name and address and then you kind of keep marketing to them, right?
Yes. That's the purpose of lead gen. So there are in Facebook, in LinkedIn, and now on Google search ads, you can have forms for potential customers to fill out on the ads themselves. So those are typically called lead gen forms. And then you're not taking them to the site. They're staying on the platform they're already on. They can submit their information and you'll get back to them later. You'll market to them and things will be beautiful.
Josh, this is like gated content.
Yeah. Yeah. Gated content's a great carrot to use for lead gen. Yeah. That gate is the lead form.
Keep going.
Yeah.
Okay. I just want to hear you try to explain that more. The carrot scenario.
Like a carrot. Okay. So, Sasha, I think I've just vented a lot and I'm sweating over here just because of the energy I'm expending in talking about this. So I think it's time to shut it down.
Let's shut it down. Great
if
job,
if there's
Josh.
Other things you'd like to demystify or heard demystify, let us know. Send us an email or a comment or something.
Yes. Hit us up on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok.
I don't think we're on Facebook.
Nope. Scratch it. Instagram, LinkedIn, and TikTok.
There it is. That's where we are.
We've just been talking a lot about Facebook. Here we are.
Oh, good times.
I just started my own Facebook channel for us. I'm just having conversations about everyone who hates digital marketers. It's fine.
That's great. That's fine. You guys do it on Facebook. And not in a print ad. Whatever. Okay, out of control, Sasha, this was fun. I will talk to you later. And all of you kind listeners, have a good day. Bye.